I'm someone who loves trying out different makeup looks, but doesn't really wear much on a daily basis, so I like to focus on making sure I have high quality staples. And whether you like a fresh face, full glam, or somewhere in between, you've probably seen Thrive Cosmetics Viral Tubing Mascara. I've certainly seen it everywhere. You know, the one in the turquoise tube? So that mascara, along with all of Thrive Cosmetics' beauty products, are certified 100% vegan and cruelty-free, which I look for in makeup, and they've got excellent quality to match. And something I didn't know from all the mascara videos I've seen is that for every product sold, Thrive Cosmetics donates either that same product, another product that is needed more, or a monetary donation. They've worked with over 500 nonprofits to help with a wide range of causes like supporting cancer survivors, people experiencing homelessness, education access, and so much more. Knowing that makes me feel even better about using their products. And I do enjoy using them. Like I said, I like having high quality staples, and so my favorites are products that are multi-purpose, like the Brilliant Eye Brightener. It comes in a bunch of colors, and I like using them as eyeliner, eyeshadow, and even highlighter. Thrive Cosmetics is luxury beauty that gives back. Right now, you can get an exclusive 20% off your first order at thrivecosmetics.com/thrive. That's Thrive Cosmetics, CAUSEMETICS, .com/thrive for 20% off your first order.
Have you ever watched an apocalyptic sci-fi movie and wondered, could any of this really happen? I'm Carrie Bechet, and on Hypothetical, we explore what-if questions two ways, through speculative science fiction and through insight from the world's most brilliant scientists. And spoiler alert, your favorite sci-fi movies aren't nearly as far-fetched as you may think. Time travel with me into our possible futures on Hypothetical. New episodes every Tuesday, available on all podcast apps. That's Hypothetical, Hypertheical.
Hey there, little angels. It's Kristen Russo. You might know me from Buffering the Vampire Slayer. I'm just here to give you a little note at the top of this episode of Angel on Top that as of this episode birthday, I am officially producing In the Room with LaToya and Morgan. Virtually, of course. But basically, if you think about Frasier, you know how like Frasier Crane was on air, but Roz was behind a little piece of glass and occasionally she'd pop in? That's what I'm doing. I'm trying it out. So you'll hear my voice just for one brief little moment in this episode, and I don't plan on talking very much, but I just wanted to let you know that I am here. I am here in presence. I am listening along with you. I cannot tell you how much of a joy it is to witness Angel on Top live in real time, and if you hear my voice from time to time, just don't be surprised. Don't be surprised. All right. Let's get to the bell. Let's get to Morgan. Let's get to LaToya. Let's do this. Welcome back to Angel on Top, a podcast where we watch and discuss every episode of Angel one by one, spoiler-free, and in tandem with our arch nemesis, Buffering the Vampire Slayer. I'm your co-host, LaToya Ferguson, a.k.a. the Cordelia Chase of the Buffering Verse, a.k.a. Bones, a.k.a. one half of the Gun Squad, Bang Bang, a.k.a. Theodore K. Mullins, a.k.a. Gilly, a.k.a. lover of long-winded bits, a.k.a. really not a fan of people telling me what not to do, especially on a podcast that I host, a.k.a. 30% that bitch.
And I'm your co-host, Morgan Ludich, a.k.a. the Winifred Burkle of the Buffering Verse, a.k.a. also Bones, a.k.a. the other half of the Gun Squad, Bang Bang, a.k.a. Frank Skobopoulos, a.k.a. also not a big old fan of being told what to do, a.k.a. not really that bitch, but trying.
And this week, we're watching Angel Season 3, Episode 11, Birthday. Birthday was written by Mare Smith and directed by Michael Grossman. It aired on the WB on January 14th, 2002, our first Angel episode of 2002.
And this is the one where Cordy dies on her birthday and then learns she might be able to change her fate, but at what cost?
It's also the one that is my favorite episode of Angel. We'll be right back.
previously on Angel. I'm gonna have a son. Whoops, Darla had to stake herself for that to happen. Cordelia's roommates with someone she never sees because he's a ghost. As this ADR line that says, he's a ghost, says, it does not sound good at all. The network clearly said, make them know it's a ghost and not just a weird wall pusher thingy. Angel and Cordy are fight training. They're drawn to one another. Gunn explains that the powers that be give Cordelia these visions. A sarcastic, I look forward to my next vision. Not. And again, I'll just note, it's not in the previouslys, but still no cases. 11 episodes in.
Look, there was off screen. They did a really big case and they made crazy bank and they just didn't tell us about it.
Obviously. But also in these previouslys, I almost forgot. These visions are killing me. She's taken some secret pills. And if she loses the visions, she's afraid she won't be able to help anymore. That they won't need her anymore. And by they, I mean Angel.
Ouch. Ouch, ouch, ouch.
And you know, we've been talking a lot about birth these past few episodes, but now it is time for a birthday. And no Holtz. I wish you could have seen the previouslys. That way you could have seen no Holtz and been even more excited to watch this episode, Morgan.
I was excited because I know it's your favorite, and I thought I had an idea of what might happen, and I hoped that it was the one with the Cordy credits, but I wasn't sure. I didn't dare let myself hope too hard, because obviously expecting that and not receiving that would be the ultimate disappointment, but luckily it was, and I was really thrilled. This episode absolutely bangs. Good favorite pick.
Thank you. So we open, again, with the idea of the previouslys. We left the previouslys, you know, the Angel-Cordelia relationship. So the speech that she's doing right now is supposed to seem like an emotional scene she's having with Angel, and it ends with her saying, I love you. What twist? It's an acceptance speech for an acting award that she's been practicing for years. You know what? Fred's in awe of the speech.
Fred says it gives her chill bumps instead of goosebumps because she is the cutest person that's ever existed.
And
I love it.
Yeah, I'm sure you were very happy with some Fred stuff in this episode.
Very, very, very happy, yes.
And because this all, again, takes place in the shortest time frame possible, they're just now cleaning up the entire mess from all the carnage and the kaboom that happened in the lobby. That's where we're at.
Yes, and Gunn is all masked up, which was odd to see.
It was familiar in these trying times. It felt safe to me. Yeah, he's cleaning up the blood. He's on that duty.
Gunn makes me feel safe in general. And Fred is looking at him with heart eyes. Like, it is on. Please kiss.
You heard it here first. Morgan wants him to kiss. You have to kiss now.
Look, I demand it, and therefore it must happen. It is also mentioned that Wes is out and not back yet. And Angel comes out with that baby. And Connor is awake, and he is being cute. And no one is allowed to touch that baby without washing their hands, which means Angel is on his shit, and he's being a good dad.
Yes, this is progress. Much more reasonable than in Dad, where no one could touch it at all. But you know what? Pig drinking bloodsuckers are okay. And Cordy meant that in a nice way. So they're doing a secret thing.
Doing a little prank. Once Cordy leaves, they're all like, does she know? And then Wes arrives and it's like, dun, dun, dun. What's it going to be?
I wonder what he's going to be with this episode titled Birthday.
We have a secret pills scene, which I know from watching like after school specials and teen shows where moms take pills with white wine, that it's not good to take secret pills in secret, ominously.
But usually, as you're saying, that means addiction. That's the shorthand for addiction. But that's not what it is here. It genuinely is for extreme pain.
Yeah, poor thing. Like, Cordy, as if my heart is not broken 1,000 times for her many times throughout this series, my heart was going out to her at this point because, gosh, these are taking their toll on her.
The powers that be. Dicks, you know.
Super dicks. Super dicks. She then leaves the bathroom and goes out and is revealed to be surprised with a super Cordy cake. She has a cape. I love this.
It's great. The show splurged to have them all sing happy birthday, because this was before you could do that. You had to pay the big bucks to those ladies.
Yeah, those congrats, ladies. You got your money. I hope you're happy.
You monsters.
You monsters. I'm so glad it's in the public domain now, as LaToya and I have made our love of the public domain and the music that belongs into it quite clear, I think, over our careers as podcasters.
Yes, and this is one of the greats. Angel is so sweet and cute here, as we haven't said that enough this season, apparently.
I know. I mean, I know I made my love for Daddy Angel very clear last week, but I just would like to say, still working for me, still doing well. I saw someone comment on our Instagram that they missed hearing the Bye for Boreanaz jingle.
Don't worry. They'll hear it in this episode.
Yes. And I just think it's because since you and I are just like by disasters in general, we are just constantly thirsting over Boreanaz and not even considering.
Don't you worry.
Labeling it with the jingle, so
you'll hear it again soon.
But yes, Cordy says, like, in terms of her cake and her presents, like, it's no Jude Law, but it'll do for a birthday surprise.
Agreed.
And they all tell her that they have presents for her, and she's like, cool, let me give you that baby then instead so that she can have the presents. And Angel's like, you really like want presents more than holding my baby? And she's like, no, take the baby, because she is having a vision.
A terrible vision, a violent vision about a teenage girl. And before she get into it, she throws herself into the weapons cabinet. And now she's comatose, which never good. But even worse when you're comatose and you wake up in a coma. Cordelia has done it. She's done what Giles thought she was crazy for saying. She has woken up in a coma. Take that, Giles. Take that, Buffering the Vampire Slayer. Team Angel.
Yeah. Hey, on our show, the impossible has happened. So I don't know. Sounds like we're maybe the cooler ones. Just something to think about.
But yeah, she's woken up in a coma. Point Angel on top. Negative points, Buffering the Vampire Slayer.
As always.
And before we get, like, really into it, I want to, you know, note how people are always, like, nitpicking this, which, so in the first season, in Prodigal, when you remember the episode, like, where Cordelia was like, we're going to get an alarm system, and I'll make it, like, the password, my birthday, so everyone remembers. And they're like, I don't know your birthday. And there, it's the code is 0522. So it's like, well, clearly, it's not 0522 that is her birthday. But the thing is, that is one of the many beautiful Easter eggs about Buffy's death.
Oh.
Yeah, because the gift is episode 522, which aired on May 22nd, which is always pretty amazing.
Oh, wow. That's really interesting.
Yeah.
Good for them. A always little fun. Easter egg.
A little Easter egg about Buffy dying.
Whenever we can make light of that.
So they're trying to wake Cordy up. And she's over on the astral plane, you know, trying to communicate, but no dice. Angel notes she's still alive. She's still breathing. So she's like in a coma some trance. He brings up the vision. And Cordelia's trying to tell him everything. But again, he can't hear. Astral plane.
Yes. And again, I know we've talked a lot about like Cordy's growth. And we're also just at a place where she is not her Sunnydale self anymore. But it is so beautiful to see her in this like very scary place and situation and almost exclusively focused on relaying the vision to them and trying to save someone rather than being scared about her own situation. Like, amazing. 5 million stars. I love her. I am so proud of her. This is an episode that's just, it loves this character, and so do I. And it's obviously your favorite for dang good reasons.
Yeah, it is. I mean, Angel calls himself a champion in this episode, but you know what? Cordelia, also a champion.
Fully agree.
Change approved. Cordelia is a champion.
So Lauren walks in and she's like, oh my God, you'll hear me. And he walks right through her. So Cordelia's little form is incorporeal.
Also, Lauren, way to avoid cleaning up the mess. It's not like they helped him clean up the mess when they like ruined his club either time.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think he is well within his rights to not help. They discover the pills.
And they're like, maybe we should take her to a hospital. To which Angel says, no, because of how into Shanshu in L.A. they did jack shit, the doctors. So what would they do now? Nothing, because it's mystical, clearly.
Yeah, and Lauren can, like, sense mystical vibes, so he confirms it. They say maybe we should, like, go to her apartment for more evidence going on if she has these pills. Cordelia does not want that to happen, and she is still trying to insist that they act upon her vision, but obviously they can't hear her. But what she can hear is a bunch of whispers.
See, we don't even need to put in the actual audio because you just did that Matt Morgan, so you're good.
Yeah, this is a very professional vocal performance for me. You're very welcome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and all this, Cordelia is still like, I need to leave them a message about the vision. Tries to pick up a pen. She cannot. Mm. Over at Cordy's, Phantom Dennis has planned a birthday surprise for Cordy himself, but nope. And then, Morgan, how much did you love this entire scene? Because obviously.
Oh, my God. I was obviously thrilled. I took 1,000 screen caps for socials and for my own personal uses.
Your collection?
For my collection. The gun gets confetti thrown at him. Fred is so cute. She introduces herself to Ghost Dennis. She tries to shake his hand but realizes she can't. So she just wiggles his little party hat.
Oh, yeah.
Which made me want to cry. And she says, you know, I'm not sure really how to do this. And she's so cute. And Gunn just takes the words right out of my mouth and looks at her and says, Fred, you are so cool. When I tell you, I wailed. I really did. I just let out an unbridled cry of passion over these cuties.
Did Michael ask you if you were okay?
No, he's truly just like, this is the way it works now. He knew that I was watching Angel, so he was like, of course, something cute must be happening.
I had to look at the shooting script for this. So in that moment, it says, Gunn can't help but grin. He gets a kick out of her. That is all it says. And then J. August Richards, he brings that to life.
You and me both, Charles.
Yeah, they need to tell Dennis that something's wrong with Cordelia. Mm-hmm. And they can't get him to sit down because they don't know if ghosts do sit down, which I would like to know that.
I would like to know. Yeah, I would like to know if it's helpful for them to be sitting down when they receive bad news. But our next scene is over in Wes's office. You know, incorporeal spirit Cordelia is yelling at him. He actually does consider that she might be on the astral plane. And he opens a book to the page with that kind of information on it. And Cordy hustles over and hunches over his shoulder to watch, to try to read. And he turns the page too soon. And she's like, ah! you know, the problems of being a little ghost.
Just a little ghost. Not a full ghost. It's a little ghost.
She's just a little ghost.
But yeah, we go like right back to Fred and Gunn looking through her apartment, and it seems too normal, according to Fred. Gunn's all up in the underwear drawer because he's Gunn.
A very, very Damon Salvatore of him to immediately touch a bra. I love that for him. Fred is so flustered by this. And he's like, you have to put that down. Which echoes back to, not to give kudos to our enemies, but my absolute favorite comedy Buffy scene, which is Willow hiding her bra from Angel.
Yes, the scene, because I always bring up how she has a full face of makeup in that scene.
Very weird, but a perfect scene nonetheless.
So they have to basically just tell Dennis, like, Cordy's, like, life is in danger. And Gunn's like, unless you want her to be a ghost like you, which that does the trick. Mm. And Fred even gives him shit for, gives it under the bed.
Yeah.
She's like, oh, you had to look at the underwear drawer first, didn't you?
And it is a big, like, Tupperware storage tub full of different pills, which not a comforting sight.
Again, all those after-school specials said, this is bad.
They taught me to very much fear those little pill bottles.
Teach you to be like, I don't touch the stuff.
Yes. I'm a classic Finch. Then in Angel's room, Angel is like, you know, like sitting vigil next to Cordy. And he is mad at her for dying.
You really piss me off, you know that? I thought we trusted each other, but you've been lying. MRIs and CAT scans, it's been going on for over a year. Why couldn't you let me in? I could have helped you. God, you made me so furious.
Little stinker. What a little stinker.
This, like, why? He asked, why couldn't you let me in? I could have helped you.
This episode is very aware that, like,
that we're watching it.
That us as viewers are like, hey, so Angel and Cordy seem like they sure want to do a kiss, and neither of them are acknowledging it. And this episode is like, well, we sure are going to acknowledge it a heck of a lot. You teases. How dare you mess with me like this?
We have a tender love over on this show, over on that Buffy show. Mm-hmm. They're doing stuff with long skirts.
They're doing stuff that's breaking houses. Come on. Bone responsibly. Lauren comes in and tries to, you know, like, touch her temples and use his powers to kind of figure out what's going on. He is very wary because the last time he did that, he got zapped clean across the room. And Cordy is, like, yelling to him, is like, Lauren, like, please, like, hear me. I'm here. She's trying to say the address. And Lauren just says, she's gone. Like, I can't sense anything.
Not good. She's clearly there. And also, again, she has probably, like, one chance to send a message to Lauren, the address from the vision.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she uses her one bullet to do the right thing because that's who she is now. And it's, you love to see it, folks.
Yeah.
Angel remains very angry, as I've written multiple times in my notes. And he's like, Lauren, you're going to go talk to the powers that be. And I am not fucking asking.
Fair enough. No asking. And I honestly wrote, like, my hero in all caps.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And Cordy's, like, getting more whispers. She's genuinely afraid now.
Mm-hmm. They kind of sound like, if for the, correct, you know, for those of you who didn't watch the episode.
I hope we're painting a proper word picture with what we're saying and the whispers that Morgan is doing.
I think we're doing an amazing job. Yeah.
We're great.
Yeah, we're great at this. So then we cut to the same room, but later. Cordy sees that Angel is asleep, and she goes and she sits in him like you do. I was going hog wild. And this was making me laugh so hard.
Did you not remember the body jacking?
I did not. And it was so silly and funny.
Yeah, she got that tactic from one of Wes's books. So hovering over him did help.
Yeah, so Cord Angel stumbles on over to the wall, grabs a pen, and starts just writing the address, like, you know, right on the wall. Because where else are you going to do it? Cordy yells at the whispers and she's, like, you know, booped out of Angel's body. It clearly, you know, she can't maintain her hold on his physical form for long.
Yeah, so there's whispers and, like, a dark spirit, like it's a ghost, like the evil ghosts and ghost. Yeah.
Mm, very spooky. And then Angel falls to the ground and Wes comes in and is like, hey, Angel, why are you on the floor? And he's like, I don't know. Think, Angel. Think about why you might be on the floor.
He says he had a dream that Cordy was trying to tell him something important, but, I mean, look at the wall.
Please. It is very dark. It is a very darkly painted wall, so I imagine it would be kind of hard to notice the magic marker on it.
I'm sure he could see it with his vampire eyes.
Yeah, come on, Angel. Are you supposed to be a detective?
Detective Angel.
Do your job.
But yeah, so they studied Cordy's latest CAT scans and more bad news.
Yeah, it looks like her brain is dying. And I'm not a doctor, but I don't think that is supposed to be happening.
You might need a second opinion, but yeah, I think so.
Yeah, that is so scary to hear. And then there is wind and shadows and a big demon appears.
And it's Skip.
Yay! Hi, Skip. I love Skip's look so much. I love Skip's horns and the little, like piercing circle thing he has on his chin. It just, Skip has good vibes, in my opinion.
Except for all the whispering and the little dark spirit thing that he was doing.
Yeah, I like to think that he can't help those things. But, like, you know, I enjoy his aesthetic and his mood. And I love his pop culture opinions. We're going to have to get into those.
Of course. But, yeah, she Cordelia is worried that Skip is death coming to take her. And he's like, nah.
No, I'm Skip.
And then he sees, like, her body, you know, in the angel's bed. And he's like, you know, most people go astral. Their spiritual shapes tend to be an idealized version of themselves. So, obviously, that's not going to be the case for Cordy. But, like, I actually like that. I don't think I've ever seen that actually be the case in anything with astral projection. I wish it kind of was the case.
I definitely like it as an idea. And I love it for the, you know, like the joke slash truth it states, which is that Cordy's really comfortable with herself and very like proud of her own body and doesn't feel the need to like put any frills on it, which I think rules and is very her. But yeah, I feel like it's usually like, I feel like you and I have had conversations about like your ghost outfit, like when you die and you become a ghost, it's like, what's going to be your ghost outfit, you know? And so I guess it's kind of like that, like her astral projection outfit would be her ghost outfit. And she's like, no, I look hot in sweats. I look hot all the time. I'm Cordelia fucking Chase, which queen shit.
Amen. Yeah, she has a lot of questions, obviously. And he's like, I'll answer them as soon as we leave. He's like, you don't belong here anymore. Which, no, she belongs here. She's Cordy.
Yes, she belongs here very much. She's a member of Team Angel. Maybe you've heard of them. They walk towards camera in slow-mo.
With a baby.
Yeah, they do it with a baby now, guys.
Yeah, he's like, she's not dead yet, but will be soon unless she comes with him. Mm-hmm. And she's like, okay, I'll come with you on one condition. Tell my friends about the vision. So still
being a very good kid. I'm so proud. But Skip's like, doesn't work that way. But, you know, the way it works is you come with me now. And she's like, fine.
Yeah. She's like, I don't want to die. And he's like, so don't. And off they go. But yeah, let's talk about how scary Cordelia's CAT scans are. Very scary.
Yeah. Cordy. What the hell? Why would you not tell anyone about this? I mean, I know that she's trying to be a big dang hero and all of that stuff, but this feels like something someone needs to know about. Someone besides Ghost Dennis?
It's like that of a cucumber, they say, basically. She should not be able to live.
Yeah, which means that, like, she's been suffering for a long time and that the effects are enormous and multiple. And she's been hiding it all this time, which, I mean, we know that Cordy's strong, but that's, like, a very impressive level of strength, but also a needless level of suffering. I, you know, don't be a martyr. Please take care of yourself.
Oh, Cordy. Speaking of someone who needs to take care of themselves, Lauren has been beaten. He is back. His horn is broken.
So importantly, Gunn is like, who did this? We're going to kick their ass, which makes me so happy because, like, given the issues they had earlier in the season, there was like a point at which Lauren still seemed a little salty about that, which, you know, fair. They destroyed his place. But now it seems like everything is all good and they are on good terms and Gunn is very protective of him. And that made me draw a lot of hearts in my notes.
Of course. You draw a lot of hearts in your notes.
I do.
So he writes it, gives it to Angel, and Lauren warns him, like, only a champion can deal with the conduit is what it is. Mm-hmm. And even then you'll have to, and he can't finish the sentence. And in the script specifically, because, like, on Hulu, it just, like, says, like, garbled language. In the script, it says, war, 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 war. That is spelled out each time.
Very cute. Yeah, he cannot speak of this place, which I like. That kind of stuff always gets me. That makes me laugh. I'm happy.
So now we're in a mall.
Skip, you're talking my language.
Mall episode.
A mall also brings me peace, Cordy. Thank you very much.
Yeah, it's actually a construct of a mall. You know, a little like The Matrix.
Skip likes The Matrix and I like Skip. Wachowskis forever. The Matrix rules. Skip may guest on Wes and Gunn's film podcast that I still would really like to listen to.
So he's going to give her a choice, but first he needs to show her some archival footage. Mm-hmm. The first is of Doyle.
Aww. Guys, remember Doyle.
Tell me all your thoughts on Doyle.
He calls this kiss and the transfer of powers a big cosmic whoops.
How dare you, sir?
I know. I'm like, excuse me. What it was very cute and made me very emotional. And he says, nobody could have anticipated his feelings for you. And the fact that, like, that is what made the transfer of power possible. But Skip says that it's a mistake. Skip, this is the first time we're disagreeing here. I'm not on board with that. I think it was a really good decision and that Cordy deserves these visions.
And Cordy is like, Doyle gave me the visions because he loved me, though she is surprised by this. I guess she was kind of like, she knew he had a thing for her, but I guess she didn't know how strong it was.
Yeah, which is like, is really sweet. And it's sweet to see the show kind of reckon with Doyle's memory and touch it, because on, like, as you pointed out last week, the cult that killed him was on the whiteboard, and this, it's nice that he isn't like wiped from history. Mm-hmm. Like, he matters and his sacrifice matters, and the love that he had for Cordy really matters. And I mean, how could you not love Cordy? She's fucking great.
Absolutely. But yeah, so he keeps saying it's a mistake because the powers that be, you know, can't foresee free will. Well, maybe mm-hmm. they should get better.
Yeah, come on, powers, like, learn.
But yeah, he says the visions are an ancient powerful force. Demons are the only ones who can withstand them.
Uh-huh. Well, sure, except Skip. For Tammy.
Oh, Eliza Doolittle herself.
Oh.
I felt like I knew you were gonna get a kick out of that, Morgan.
Yeah, I loved Tammy, obviously. She had the visions for a year in 1630. I write in my notes, cutie. Then I write in my notes, her head exploded.
You wrote nothing about her accent in your notes. I am surprised.
I didn't even need to. It's just, it's pure vibes. It's good. It's because I had no notes.
I brought up the Dick Van Dyking like a few episodes ago, and here it is in full force. This is the accent I want Holtz to be doing.
Look, yeah, I would respect Holtz more if he did this accent, because I think it's cowardly to throw it away and try to do a vague accent. You gotta just like hit the gas and try something bold, even if it's very silly.
It's very silly. But yeah, so people thought she was a witch. They were gonna burn her, but they didn't get a chance to, because her last vision blew out the back of her skull. And then they do the little turn and they show it, which I'm pretty sure in some syndication, they don't show the back. I think sometimes on TNT, I'm pretty sure they don't show the back of her head, because that's gruesome to show, like, I don't know, 5 a.m. or whatever they air it on TNT.
Yeah, with like hair and like clumpy flesh and blood and stuff. It's gross. It's gnarly. I loved it.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm. You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales, because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
The conduit like speaks in many voices and is like, you know, not something you can see, which I liked. I dig that. Like, I think it can be really hard to show like all powerful beings. I think it can be really difficult to try to like, especially because the Buffyverse in general has so many of these like big all powerful things, especially Angel with like the powers that be and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. But I think this was a good workaround. A spooky voice, a fire. It was menacing. And Angel yells that he wants the visions gone and that Cordelia has suffered enough. And the conduit tosses him around the room about it.
They call him it a bunch, and they're like, the powers owe nothing. You know what? Angel refuses to leave.
Mm-hmm.
It's not fun for him at all. None of this is fun for him. Then we get back to talking about Cordelia's acting career. She's like, I don't have an acting career. Mm-hmm. And then we get a football play on the party in the pilot.
Yes, I love Cordelia watching the pilot.
Inside every living thing, there's a connection to the powers that be. Call it instinct, intuition. Deep down, we all know our purpose in this world.
Are you saying I was meant to be an actress?
No. I'm saying you're meant to be an incredibly famous and wealthy actress.
And Cordy could absolutely have the life that she dreamed of when she first came to Los Angeles, but she would not be able to, you know, work with Angel or be around him at all, ever.
Yeah. No more monsters, no more visions, no dying until, you know, you're old and it's natural. But she's like, but no Angel?
And he says, yeah, if you go back to your body right now, you will be locked in it, unable to move or speak until your next vision comes and blows the back of your head out. Ow.
Not good. But she's like, he needs me. And Skip is getting visibly frustrated the longer this goes. Because I'm sure with any other person, it'd be so much quicker to do this. This is Cordelia Chase, though. She is stubborn as hell.
Yeah, and most importantly to me, she says, but what about that girl? Like, again, she wants to do the right thing. The fact that she has seen pain and suffering, that she knows it's possible to stop, like, has lit this, like, fire under her that she can't put out. And that's hero shit. That's good shit. And I'm so proud of her. And, I mean, I know you and I are both people who like superheroes and, like, you know, shows about, you know, do-gooders. And this is why you watch it. It only works when I feel like the people have that real earnest motivation to do good and to be kind and to save people. And Cordy has it. That's why she's super Cordy on her cake.
But yeah, frustrated, Skip takes her to watch Angel with the conduit. And of course, this is honestly some real Sajan shit. He brings her like at the worst possible moment. Angel is just saying like the frustrated things, basically doing anything. He's saying anything he can to get them to take away the visions, basically. Not that he's not saying it because he thinks she is just a rich girl from Sunnydale. He's saying that because, like, well, maybe this will help to get them to do the thing.
She's not strong enough to handle them.
Obstinate. It speaks and does not listen.
No, you're not listening! Cordelia's not a champion. She's a rich girl from Sunnydale who likes to play superhero.
She doesn't have what it takes to do this. Don't the powers get that? Stop whispering and listen to me, damn it! She's weak.
I write in my notes at this point, I'm cry. Because I just, like, I don't want to see that. That hurts me. And it obviously hurts Cordelia. She's like, take me out of here. Like, I don't want to watch this anymore. And I wonder, do you feel like Cordelia knows what's happening and, like, that this is, like, to a certain extent an act? Or does she, like, really believe that Angel feels this way about her? Because, gosh, I hope she doesn't. That hurts my heart.
I think she believes that. I think she believes it, unfortunately. And obviously she doesn't hear the rest of it, which is where he says that he's more afraid of her dying than she is. What is that? And I write in my notes, that's love, baby.
Absolutely and completely heartbreaking. The idea that Angel, like, is in many ways, like, such a stranger to, like, to adult love, but also to loving someone so vulnerable. Because loving Buffy is very different than loving Cordelia, because Buffy is, to this certain extent, like, kind of indestructible. Whereas Cordelia is, like, significantly more vulnerable. And, like, you know, this hero stuff is maybe not super easy for her. It's something she's had to work at and earn and develop. And the idea that he doesn't even understand his own feelings. One, makes sense because Angel loved the boy, but his emotional intelligence is not not vast. But two, just that is love, buddy.
That's what that is. Yeah,
I teared up because
I mean, the conduit can't answer that question for you because obviously they don't know what love is, but that's what that is.
Yeah, we can tell you.
So she makes the choice. Courtney makes the choice. Skip's going to make her a star. And then, you know what? She becomes a two-time Emmy-winning star. And I write, okay, sure.
Okay, sure. I love it. Do we want to talk about believability of this, given what we've seen of Cordelia's acting abilities in the past?
Right? That's the thing. Because she took acting classes. She's just not good.
Yeah, she's never seemed particularly good about it.
Good at it because of the visions, because she could tap into new emotions. That was happening at the end of season two before the Pylea arc.
Yeah, and she's just like, I don't know. It would make more sense to me if Cordy was like, you know, like a, like not a reality personality, but like was herself. Like if she had like a talk show or something like that. Like, wouldn't you watch the Cordy talk show?
Yes.
Like Cordelia's made to be a morning show personality. And I say that meaning it of the utmost compliment. I would like to wake up and have my cup of coffee with Cordelia Chase.
Yes.
That sounds good to me.
But at the same time, the Cordy theme song slaps.
1, 2, 3, 4.
There's a feeling that I'm after.
Absolutely slaps. I write in my notes titles. I would watch. I would love to watch Cordy. I love that there are all these other people and other characters on the periphery of the titles, and they're constantly just like being pushed out of frame by Cordelia doing something adorkable. Like, I love it.
Ooh, baby, stay a while. It's Marty Noxon and David Greenwalt.
Oh, that makes me so happy. I assume you must have so many opinions on this opening sequence.
Well, have you seen the deleted scene, which is a scene from this show?
I have not and would like to.
Yeah, because it's on the Angel season 3 DVD, and I've watched it many times. I gotta say, it's for the best. It's a deleted scene. It's I appreciate them doing a, like, literally filming a multicam scene with a live studio audience. That is awesome.
multi-camera acting is different than other acting. Not better or worse, Cordelia very
different. Cordelia was very much trying to be like a dramatic actress, and that was not the route for her.
Mm-hmm.
Post-show, Cordelia is talking with her assistant, Nev, played by Patrick Breen, one of those, hey, it's that guy. He's in Galaxy Quest. He's in the episode of Ally McBeal where John and Taye Diggs and Robert Downey Jr. do the Barry White dance.
Love that for him. As a beleaguered Hollywood assistant, I relate to Nev intensely. And Cordelia is saying that she wants something high.
She has a nagging feeling that she's forgetting something, which is something Skip was telling her about, which was supposed to be like the thing she felt for her acting career. But whoops. And yeah, she stumbles on wanting to go to the Hyperion, which is poppin' in this reality.
Yes, the sideways Hyperion is beautiful and is like decorated in all these twinkly lights. And the concierge is stunned to see the famous Cordelia Chase.
This creep. But yeah, also it's popping, but like knowing the history of the Hyperion, like a bunch of people are going to die soon in that place.
Any second.
It's still like has the demon probably still feeding off all of these people.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, the concierge does really put his foot in his mouth and say several accidentally creepy things to Cordelia. But eventually he takes her up to her luxury suite.
And she says, no, she is drawn to a standard suite, which is Angel's room, which I don't believe that's standard. It's a very large room. We've seen Angel's room. It's large.
Yeah, and it's like, why would Angel be like, I won't take the bigger room? Like, I mean, you live there. You're allowed to take whichever room you want, buddy.
Angel continues to punish himself, takes a standard room instead of the luxury suite.
That isn't getting you any points. That is not getting you any Shanshu prophecy tokens, dude.
But yeah, she goes into what is usually Angel's room. She removes the wallpaper and sees the message, the 171 Oak, that she made Angel write. Because Skip even says, basically, you're kind of just, it's not really going back in time, but you're kind of just like, it's a coat of paint, pretty much. So it literally is, what he and the powers did was wallpaper over the actual reality anyway.
Yeah, which I love. And I think the logic of that works like very nicely and very cleanly. Like the less you explain, the better it is. And I think they do a really good job there. And she heads right on over to 171 Oak.
In Reseda, baby.
Yeah, baby.
Going deep valley in here.
Love to see it. She is greeted by like a young woman who's like, oh my God, you're Cordy.
Yeah, she is fangirling out, as we all would in that situation, even without Cordelia Chase being a celebrity. But yes, this young teenage girl, Cynthia, played by Amy Garcia in one of her first roles. Amy Garcia, of course, on Lucifer. She was in Dexter and all those terrible seasons. But she's still, hey, she was still making that Dexter money, so good for her.
Hell,
you know,
yeah.
She's been around the block. And she's actually one of the last episodes of Lucifer, like in its original Fox run, is an alt-world episode where one of the characters is a celebrity, and she interacts with Amy Garcia's character, who like fangirls in this exact way when she meets her.
That's so cute. I love that.
it's very, very cute. It always works, the fangirling.
It's adorable. And Cynthia is so excited to see her, but does ask, what are you doing here, famous person? Because like, we cannot all be that girl that like Harry Styles visited her room, you know? Like, why are famous people coming there?
What are you doing here in Reseda, famous person? You're not here for indie wrestling, so why are you here?
And Cordelia asks, is everything okay here? Honey.
This is like a tabloid story waiting to happen. Like, Cordelia Chase on a bender shows up in Reseda asking if everything's okay.
Yeah, TMZ is going to pick that up for sure. Cynthia explains that, like, her dad left. Her mom is, like, out of town, I think in Ojai. And she says, do you want to see something cool?
Cool is subjective, obviously.
Cynthia, babe, I'm worried about you. She's doing a spell to get her dad to come back. And she's
a retrieval
like, cool
spell.
Pentagram. Huh?
Okay, so Cordelia she's from Sunnydale, so she knows that's bad and not cool. So that hasn't changed, obviously. But I just want to note, because this episode has like a lot of, you know, callbacks and stuff. A demon appears before they can leave, because Morty's like, we got to leave. A demon. And so back into Shanshu in L.A., which, because this kind of goes back to that, Wesley talks about a prophesied beast, a razor-toothed, six-eyed harbinger of death that's due to arise in Reseda. Supposed to be in 2003, but I think this, it's 2002. I think it's fine.
Wow. Okay, good. Good on
them. You don't get a close look at this demon because they're kind of moving fast, probably. I don't know how it actually looks because it could be like really cheap and they're like, let's just up the frame rate. But it kind of looks like it might be the demon.
That is great. I totally buy it. And that makes me happy, like continuity-wise and nerdy brain-wise.
Yeah, because specifically it's just saying a demon will be summoned in Reseda around this time. Like, that's kind of very specific, you know?
Very. I love that. We cut to commercial and come back. Cordy uses her Sunnydale skills and attacks the monster with a lamp. So she's still capable of fighting.
She is. She's very capable of fighting. If this was a true Sunnydale callback, I wish she would have a spatula.
I mean, that would be the dream, yes. But then there's a big noise, and who bursts in the door but Wes and Gunn? But they're looking a little different.
I mean, only one of them's looking a little different.
I mean, Gunn has a scar.
I didn't really notice it, actually. It's not as prominent as the lack of arm.
It really isn't. And the, like Days scruff that Alexis Denisov is rocking. So Wes has one arm, Gunn has a scar, and Cordy does recognize Wes from their time together in Sunnydale, and is like, what the hell?
See, because that's the problem, really. All of this, like, do-over, basically, doesn't change the fact that Cordelia was raised in Sunnydale, and she was part of the Scoobies, and she knows about, like, she's just not going to be like, I don't care that this still exists in the world if she's, like, brought back into it, you know?
Yeah, you can't unknow all of that stuff. And you can't unknow how important it is that it's dealt with.
Yeah, it's one thing to be like, well, I'm not in the Hellmouth anymore, so maybe the demon thing isn't as bad as it would have been in Sunnydale and leave. And, but if you're confronted with it again in Los Angeles, like, you're not just going to ignore it.
Yeah. And so the monster is killed.
Yay!
And Cordy tells Wes that something weird is going on. Sunnydale weird.
That is true.
And poor Cynthia is really worried that her mom's gonna freak out because the place
Cynthia.
Is destroyed.
But also, I feel bad for Cynthia. Like, she's not doing well, and her mom just went to go hang out with her friends in Ojai. Like, this poor kid.
Yeah, somebody supervise Cynthia, please.
Cynthia, be adopted by Cordelia.
Please.
Matt Angel's like, there's a new kid in town on an Angel, and Cynthia just like has like pink hair, and you know she plays her music too loud. How will Angel Investigations handle Cynthia?
Angel Investigations is up against its worst enemy ever, a teenager. yes. We both did electric guitars with full miming, and that is good.
God, we suck.
Jenny, give us a Cynthia jingle.
Cynthia. La, la, la. Having fun, tearing up hotel Iberian.
So then outside the house, Cordelia kind of explains what's going on with her and, like, she actually gets to meet Gunn, who's like, cannot believe that Wes and her know each other.
He didn't, like, he thought like Wes was just making shit up, apparently.
Yeah, and he's like, did you guys actually kiss? And Cordelia's like, LOL, yeah.
I love that we can laugh about that, because again, it was funny.
It was very funny. It was a very comedic kiss. And, you know, Gunn makes this great point about Sunnydalers and repression.
But before he does that, we learned that a Kungai demon is what got Wes's arm, which the Kungai demon was what he was hunting when he appeared as a rogue demon hunter. He lost his arm as soon as he got to Los Angeles.
Oh, Wes. God, as if, like, we could not clown on the rogue demon hunter, like, phase enough. The fact that it ultimately would have resulted in the loss of his arm, like, honey, that was not it.
So much leather. So, repression, Sunnydale. Yeah, that's how you survive in Sunnydale. If you're not, like, part of the Scoobies, you have to repress. Joyce! Joyce, the queen of repression!
Yes, absolutely. Like, everybody is not remembering things just to get by. It's the only coping mechanism they have, Gunn. Don't knock it.
Simpler times.
Truly. But then our next scene is at, I assumed this was like Wes's place.
Yeah, this is Wes's place. Just we got that blue color tone, and I love it. And also, I learned from the shooting script that, like, those flash cut transitions, it says flashy McFlash cut.
Cute. Harkening back to, like, old school Angel transitions. And Wes explains to Cordelia that Angel, you know, like, is different than when she knew him in Sunnydale. He came to L.A. alone, and then his only friend, Doyle, died and gave him visions.
So!
Did he?
Well, we know it's canon that Doyle's a little bi for Boreanaz.
Yeah, baby.
If I only know one way to transfer the visions from person to person.
I actually only know of one way, too. To do a little smooch.
Transitive property. They smooched.
They kissed. Yeah.
Play that jingle. Play that fucking jingle.
Play it, baby.
He's got a booty stare and hot spiky hair. If you're straight or gay, your tingly feelings don't care. You're just being honest about this sexy demonic in your bi for Boreanaz. Bi for Boreanaz. Bi for Boreanaz.
I hope everyone's happy. Bye for Boreanaz.
Oh my god. So sad. I don't like to hear it. I don't like to think about this version of Angel and what his life has been like. It hurts my heart and my head. And Cordelia says this all seems like the suckiest job in the world.
Yeah, it is. And she's like, this is how you make your living? And Gunn's like, sometimes, basically. But hey, still doing better than Buffy and company.
Mm-hmm. And like Wes is like, just, you know, like, Angel is not well. Why don't we just tell him you stopped by and say hi? Like, he really is trying to protect both Cordelia and Angel from this interaction, which is just really good Wes stuff, like very believable Wes of any universe stuff. And I love it.
Because yeah, he says that, like, sometimes Angel sends them out to save the people he killed 200 years ago. Oof.
Yeah, that's not good. And there are a few things this camp loves more than to write someone in, like, the throes of madness mumbling things to themselves. And they sure do deliver here. And that definitely tracks with that and breaks my heart. So
yeah,
it's great that these newfound abilities didn't distract him from his awful guilt that plagues him at every moment of the day.
They only amplify it. And, like, as Skip said, you have to be a demon to, like, you know, be able to take them on without them exploding your head. But it is because of Cordelia's strength that she didn't, like, snap the way Angel did. It wasn't racked with guilt. That's the difference. Mm-hmm. Angel doesn't have the same strength as Cordelia in that form, even though he is a demon.
No, he doesn't, like... And I think Angel will be the first to admit, like, that he is a quote-unquote, like, weak person. Like, he's very ruled by his guilt and his feelings, and he's not good at coping with anything. And I, you know, like, which is not a value judgment on him. Those things are hard to do, but he is clearly, like, not cut out to have these powers and have access to these people's, like, pain and suffering, because he already all of his thoughts are about pain and suffering.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. At least Cordy has thoughts about cool shoes sometimes. And malls.
Yep. Yeah, Wes lets her in, and now we see this version of Angel, which means I guess we can do fuck watch at this very upsetting moment.
Woohoo!
Flirting, understanding, consent, and kissing. Flirting, understanding, consent, and kissing.
Fuck watch.
Who's yours?
Who's yours?
I haven't picked. I struggled to pick.
I also struggled to pick. I think I know what yours should be. I think I know what mine is. I'll just be honest. It's one-armed Wesley.
I mean, yeah, fair.
And because it is an alt-world version of Wesley, if I pick Wesley again, it's different.
Then I think, following your lead, I'm going to pick alt-world gun.
I'm surprised you did not pick Skip. I thought that was going to be yours.
Skip, I want to discuss cinema with, you know? Like, I don't see our relationship as in any way sexual, but...
Oh, so as a terrible person would say, you're putting Skip in the friend zone.
Yes. Yeah, I'm friend-zoning Skip.
I just want everybody to know that I pick Skip. Okay, that's all I have to say. Bye.
Chris is like, someone's gonna fuck Skip. I mean, someone... God. That's Kristen's corner saying, I want to fuck Skip.
Love that journey for you, Kristen. Yeah, I'm gonna go with Hot Face Scar Gunn, who is like still has a sense of humor enough to clown on his friends, even though things are dire, which to me is the mark of a fun person. So yeah, it's alt gun.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
You know what's really sad?
Mm.
In this world, Fred's stuck in Pylea.
I don't want to think about that.
Sorry.
Gilly. That hurts my heart and it hurts my soul and I don't want to think about it because I like my Fred safe. I like my Fred in Los Angeles. And I like my Fred happy.
Like my friend eating comically sized ice cream cones.
Absolutely. And no longer pining after Angel.
That's for sure. But yeah, Angel's not really in a pine-worthy form right here. He's very unwell. And it seems like, you know, they're afraid he might hurt Cordelia. But really, Angel's the one who's afraid of her.
Yeah. There are, like, restraints in the room for when they have to, like, you know, subdue him from either hurting someone else or himself, which is, you know, upsetting to see and to think about. He's muttering to himself. And the second he sees her, he, like, runs away and hides in a corner. Ow.
And Wesley says this is one of his good days.
Yeah, so this is a relatively well-adjusted sideways Angel we're seeing here. And it's like he's fully just kind of broken. And it is interesting to think about the idea that this is a burden that Cordelia carries pretty dang gracefully and that has like fully tanked him. So if there is any doubt that she is, you know, that she's still just some girl from Sunnydale who isn't a champion, this should clear things up for you. Because Cordelia Chase fucking rules and she has not let this, like, bring her down. Sure, it is damaging her brain, but that's what the pills are for, baby. She's still here, and she's still cool, and I love her to death. But Cordelia sees Angel suffering, and it clearly hurts her heart, much like it hurts ours. So what does she do? She did what Doyle must have done at one point. She kisses Angel.
There is no other option as to what Doyle and Angel must have done to transfer these powers. Because now she kisses Angel and Angel transfers his powers. Kissing. And you know what? Also, that means love, baby, because love's part of it.
Yeah, it does. And what'd you think of this kiss? Because LaJoy, I'm going to make this assumption about you. You kind of seem like you're really into, like, Cordelia and Angel as a romantic pairing.
What?
This is something I've picked up that I think has been quite subtle.
Been so subtle. It's good. And the thing that I guess sucks is that Angel doesn't know this happened. in general, I wanted to talk about just, you know, our alt-world episodes in of TV, because this is a great alt-world episode. Obviously, Buffy has had alt-world episodes like The Wish, which was far more tragic for Cordelia, I must say.
Yeah, ouch.
Or, of course, Superstar, which is far more selfish than what Cordelia is doing in this episode.
Very much so, yes.
But a show I always reference, and I must force you to watch, Morgan, is the U.S. version of Being Human. Mm-hmm. And in their final season, they have like a 2-episode alt-world arc, which I just think is like one of the best in general. And in it, basically, the character who is like in, like, she's experiencing this, she falls in love with her, like, with one of the guys. And at the end, when she's like about to go back to her world, he's like, "You have to like make me remember, basically, that we were in love, because I don't want to forget this, obviously." So she goes back and she's spending like the rest of like the season like trying to remind him, because he doesn't remember this. It's,
well, that is deeply romantic.
It is deeply romantic. And obviously, I'll just say it, the male half of that is Whitwer.
Hot.
Sam Witwer, my love, come on the podcast. I don't know if you've ever seen Angel, but come on the pod.
Sam Witwer, come on the pod. LaToya and I are your biggest fans.
It's true.
This is lovely. Yeah, alt-world episodes. Now, of course, that you've mentioned it, every single one that's ever existed has flown out of my brain. I can only think of the Friends one, which does include my favorite Phoebe joke, where she explains that's when she lived in a box, thought she had to work on stocks and only eat lox, because she thought that everything that rhymed was true. So Phoebe remains.
You referenced the Friends alt-world episode?
Yep, that's all I got.
Yeah, alt-world episodes are up there with Groundhog Day episodes as my favorite fun little twist on things.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah, I love a Groundhog Day episode. That's like the best Supernatural, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Speaking of pop culture, this is when Skip comes back and he does make a Gladiator reference, to which he says, "Didn't love it." Which I do agree that The Matrix is better than Gladiator. So, like,
wow. Hot take.
I know. I am just throwing down gauntlets here. But yeah, The Matrix rips. Cordelia is like, "Look, I know you said this was impossible, but you need to find a loophole." And there is one.
Yeah, there is. Basically, she'd have to become part demon. The visions would be fine, but she may never be able to lead a human life again. And she, without hesitation, says, "So demonize me already." Yeah!
Yes! So cool. Yes, no refusing the call, just being a badass. Like, it. And the thing is, when was the last time Cordelia was living a normal fucking human life at all? Like, she, the die is cast on this. Like, she is who she is. She'll, why not
fucking D&D nerd?
Yeah, baby.
But yeah, and then, you know, Skip says, "It was an honor being your guide, Cordelia Chase," which leads me to think his frustration was kind of a prank.
Maybe a little bit of a prank, or maybe ultimately he's like, "Well, we've had a lot of fun here. Like, I got exasperated with you, but you're a champ."
But think about it. The vision is solved, but it was only going to exist in the alt world for her to save. So, like, she had to kind of go through all this. It was a little bit of a prank.
A little bit of a prank. All right, prank Sinatra.
Skip is prank Sinatra. Cordelia wakes. Angel hugs her and he says, "I thought I lost you." And I want to cry.
So many feelings. This is sweet and romantic and lovely. She feels herself for horns or a tail and is excited that there aren't any.
Shout out to Aspect of the Demon from Earshot.
They are all just like, what is going on with Cordelia?
And then she goes like all Wizard of Oz, saying there was this actress and this one-armed guy. And she's like, "That vision's been taken care of, but I'm having another one." And she just says it so casually. No pain. And they're all staring. And why are they staring, Morgan?
Oh, no reason. Just that she is floating in midair.
Aspect of the Demon, baby.
Yes. Love, love, love. Just fucking great. So cool. Like, I adore her.
Imagine young LaToya. I am a freshman in high school. I'm watching this episode of television, and that happens. Imagine just me losing my shit. Cordelia's floating.
To be a fly on that wall, I would love to have seen small LaToya react to that. It's such a, like, it's so lovely and joyful, and this episode is so, like, celebratory of who Cordelia is and who she has been and how she has grown, and it is about kind of, like, launching forward into this new chapter for her, and it's just, like, it makes me feel so good. Like, the fact that the show loves her like we do is good to me, and is what the character deserves. It is what Charisma Carpenter deserves. It is... I'm very happy. This episode made me very, very happy.
David Greenwald always believed that. I will just say that.
Absolutely.
And now we have completed another episode of Angel, which means it's time for Angel himself to watch some television from the WB. Woo! Hit the theme.
Angel is a vampire. Does he even like TV?
I think he'll like the WB.
They got that hot teen drama to ease the pain and trauma. And here's the episode that he needs to see.
I love surprising you with these episodes, Morgan. You never know when we choose.
Never.
What do you think it will be like in the ballpark for episodes? You know, we've talked about a lot of TV in this, and a lot of TV styles.
So this is a lot of concepts. Yeah, a lot of concepts. This is an episode Angel needs to watch, and I think he, if so, by that metric, this episode he really, like, was reminded how much he values Cordy. Maybe kind of like we learned a lesson that he also might need to learn about Cordy's fortitude, and it may be looking a little different than his own kind of fortitude. So naturally, I'm going to assume Seventh Heaven.
No, I still haven't chosen Seventh Heaven.
I'm waiting.
I know. I think everyone's waiting for me to choose Seventh Heaven. But no, you know, this is obviously about Angel learning a lesson. And in this case, it's about, you know, the things we do for the people that we love, to quote Bush. And this will be episode, season 3, episode 20 of Gilmore Girls, Say Goodnight, Gracie, a.k.a. the episode where Dave Rogowski stays up all night and reads the Bible cover to cover after asking Mrs. Kim for permission to date Lane.
I have melted into a puddle because this is the most romantic thing that I've ever seen on television. I don't like Gilmore Girls listeners.
I know.
And I'm sorry about that, because I know that makes people mad and people get very confused because I'm a fast-talking brunette. But don't stereotype. But Adam Brody on Gilmore Girls is so cute. He is like, he's my dream boy. Like, that's the dream. He read the Bible for her. Yeah, Angel needs to see that. Angel needs to know what a real man looks like.
I mean, this is what you do. I understand, you know, going to the conduit and everything you do, but you don't insult the woman accidentally when you're trying to help. You don't do that. I don't think Dave Rogowski was insulting Lane as he was reading the Bible, even though the quote that Mrs. Kim said was from Henry VI. It wasn't from the Bible, so he read the wrong thing anyway.
He's good. He did that. I fucking love him. I would have probably liked Gilmore Girls a lot more if had he not left for the OC. But I'm glad that Angel's gonna learn a little something about how to treat a lady.
Exactly. You could learn a lot from Dave Rogowski. Maybe not Seth Cohen. You learn what not to do from Seth Cohen. This is also the episode where Dean in his suit tells Rory he got engaged to Lindsay, which is always hilarious to me. It's just him in the goofy suit, like, I'm engaged. And then he gives Rory shit for having a terrible boyfriend in Jess, and that's always good to me.
Very funny. Nothing like hearing that your childhood love is engaged to make you feel all sorts of ways.
Nothing like just graduating high school and your childhood love saying, I'm engaged.
Oh, Gilmore Girls.
But yeah, that moment right there is like the kick that is the alt world. Dean saying, I'm engaged.
Yeah, I feel like that this will teach Angel several lessons.
Oh, this episode is also the episode that brings in Jess's father, played by Rob Estes, to try to prep for the spinoff that never happened. And this will also teach Angel how to be a better dad by not being like Rob Estes and not fathering anyone who could grow up to be like Jess Mariano.
I'm not as anti-Jess as you are, but I agree that there is a lot for Angel to learn in this episode. And I think you've done a great job picking a good one.
This has been us talking about Gilmore Girls for way too long. Hit the theme again, please.
Angel is a vampire. Does he even like TV?
I think he'll like the WB.
They get that hot teen drama to ease the pain and trauma. And here's the episode that he needs to see.
We did it. We talked about birthday.
We did. Is there anything else you'd like to say? I know this one's really special to you, so I want to make sure you get all your stuff out.
I mean, this episode just fucking rules. It's if you disagree with that, I don't know what's wrong with you, actually. Sorry, well, you're wrong. You know, there's always like bigger episodes of shows and stuff, but I don't usually go for like the big event episodes. I go for like the ones that, you know, are really character driven and like in just like a quote unquote normal way. So I feel like birthday is that. Birthday is a culmination. It's just full of callbacks and just little. We got to this place. It's been a long and winding road, and it's beautiful to see.
Yeah, and I know often saying that things are, quote, for the fans can be like a toxic thing, but this does feel like it is for the fans in the best way. Like, it has all these Easter eggs. Like, it's like lovely to watch multiple times. Like, it has so many fun things about it. Like, it rewards you for earnestly loving and caring about the show. And I think that's the best kind of television episode you can make. So I agree. It's very special.
Baby, stay a while. Next time around, we're doing episode 12 of season 3, Provider. What do you think's going to happen in that one, Morgan?
Someone's going to provide.
Ooh. You know, I've always heard the earth, it provides.
I'm assuming Holtz will be back to darken my doorway once again, along with Justine.
They're providing our favorite characters, Holtz and Justine.
And Provider, it sounds like kind of what a parent does. So maybe more Angel and Connor stuff.
What if they're like, the episode's just like, Dad, Provider, Father, Parent.
Papa. It'd be good.
Guardian.
I'd like it.
The season finale, Emancipation. Oh no, he's a baby.
No! Too soon. Shall we move on over to plugs?
Hit him with the plugs, Morgan.
Woo! You can follow this podcast at Angel on Top Cast on both Twitter and Instagram. And you can send us an email at angelontoppodcast@gmail.com. And you can visit our website at angelontop.com. And also, we have Patreon, where we are starting a new and exciting movie club. We should have our Down with Love episode out, which is me and Kristen discussing that movie, which is one of my favorites. And April's movie will be Legally Blonde with another member of the Buffering podcast, one Miss Jenny. And she's never seen this movie, which in my mind is a crime. And we will be correcting that. And if you would like to follow me on socials, I'm at Lorgan Mudich on everything. So treat yourself or don't. And where can the people find you, LaToya?
Don't. Again, my Twitter is at LaFergs. If you follow me, do not tweet at me, please. I just want peace.
Please give her peace. Please understand what a joke sounds and looks like. That's all for us. So until next time, gang.
They can't hear my salute, but I salute.
They can't hear your salute. Bye.
Bye.
1, 2, 3, 4.
There's a feeling that I'm after. Ooh, I see you smile. Yeah.
Anna Sheridan, New York Times bestselling author of supernatural horror. Missing for nearly 6 months now.
That's not possible. Is the compass broken? Or did I turn to the past?
Given the circumstances of her disappearance, someone with a more vivid imagination might decide she'd pierced the veil, so to speak.
Weak radio signal. 700 meters. Closing fast.
There's no place for ghost stories and close encounters in this investigation, or any other.
I need you to find me.
To save yourself.
Of course. What else would it be?
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.